Christians should engage the news media because of what we do so many other things for. We care about the truth.
Molly Hemingway of Fox News speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And we do not let error go uncorrected in other ways, and we should not let error go uncorrected in the news media. We should be thoughtful news consumers. We should help journalists who know very little about our faith. I mean, I hear people complain about the media, and they complain about how a story is covered. Well, write a letter to them when they err, and gently and nicely talk to them about what they got wrong.
You can listen to Molly Hemingway's presentation, Making the Case for Christians Engaging the News Media, and all of the speakers at our 2017 Making the Case conferences on an audio DVD. We'll send it to you for a $300 year-end tax-deductible donation. Look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org. According to the Washington Post, lawmakers' resignation raises questions of pro-life approach to IVF and to surrogacy. Speaking, of course, about Representative Trent Franks, who announced his resignation very recently. And part of the allegations made against him had to do with him having conversations or making requests of staffers, maybe even offering large sums of money for them to act as surrogates. What's the pro-life lesson from all of this? Joining us on this Monday afternoon, Jennifer Lall. She's a regular guest. She spent 25 years as a pediatric critical care nurse, a hospital administrator, and a senior-level nursing manager. She's founder and president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network and director and executive producer of the films Exploitation, Anonymous Father's Day, and Breeders, a Subclass of Women. Jennifer, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me on again, Todd.
What is the main question that the resignation of Representative Trent Franks raises for you?
Well, in my mind, you know, he positioned himself as doing pro-life IVF surrogacy. And the main issue is I don't understand how on earth the pro-life community or pro-life leaders would even begin to think of surrogacy as being a pro-life endeavor.
Why is that?
Well, if you just look at the raw data on the statistics of in vitro fertilization, making embryos in the lab, the most recent is from 2015. That's the data that we have from the Centers for Disease Control, which shows that over 91,000 IVF cycles were done in that 1 year. Out of the 91,000 cycles, we had 59,000 embryos transferred into uteruses, which resulted in 21,000 and change babies being born. So just looking at the raw data, we see that in each cycle, embryos are lost along the way. I don't understand how you could even call that a pro-life approach to making babies.
So the problem there really is with the current state and of IVF, not so much necessarily. Surrogacy is another question, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But you're speaking really here about the IVF procedure itself, aren't you?
Yes, and the actual technique of creating very tiny human life in the laboratory, being able to transfer it into a womb, and then at the end of the day, or at the end of 9 months, if you will, have a baby being born. And I've been tracking this data for years, and that number is not changing. So even though the techniques keep getting better, so they say, we still have a very, very high embryo loss in the creation of life in the laboratory. That's why we have almost 750,000 human embryos in frozen storage. We make so many because we know that we're going to lose so many along the way. And the end goal for people who enter into this process is a baby. So I think it's very disingenuous for, in this case, Representative Franks to say that it was a pro-life approach because they didn't selectively reduce or they didn't use eugenics or any of that kind of stuff.
Then let's talk about whatever questions surrogacy itself may raise for you.
Well, again, in using this particular example, and I'm happy that we have such a high-profile person that's, you know, kind of in hot water over it. You know, he apparently is a, you know, Southern Baptist, so a man of deep faith. And if I read my Christian Bible the way I think it's written, there's language about, I knit you together in your mother's womb, not some nice, wonderful woman who he talked about that helped he and his wife have children. There's something very important as an ex-pediatric nurse who has a lot of experience in maternal child health. We know that bonding happens in the womb and that bonding is good between mother and child. So to say that we can just farm out to a nice lady the creation of our children. We're in the season of Advent right now. How did Jesus come to us? In the womb of his mother. You know, God didn't say, well, here's this nice woman who I'm going to have the, you know, my son being born through. It was through his mother's womb. So I think it's unfortunate that people of deep Christian faith can substitute the mother, which is the story of Sarah and Abraham, and we know how that didn't turn out so well, but to substitute the mother and outsource the job, if you will.
So you have two concerns. One is that even, quote-unquote, pro-life approaches to IVF still leaves embryos frozen in stasis, so to speak. And with respect to surrogacy, your concern is that in a more broad sense, we are ignoring the bond between mother and child that is formed there even in the womb.
Absolutely. I mean, it gets back to the old, you know, begotten or made. And if you look at some of the, you know, more smarter than I am, Christian theologians who've written about this, you know, Oliver O'Donovan's book, Begotten, Not Made. You know, once we move life into the laboratory, we're making. It's technique. It's C.S. Lewis' abolition of man. The man molders versus being begotten and understanding children as gifts and blessings. And we don't all get the same gifts and blessings. And in the case of Representative Franks and his wife, you know, they have not been blessed with the gift of children. We're not entitled to children, though. That doesn't mean we can, you know, take matters into our own hands, either old-fashioned Sarah and Abraham way or the new modern way, which is in the laboratory and, you know, paying another woman to have a baby for us.
What are your concerns about the exploitation of women in both IVF and in surrogacy?
Well, I always make the statement that you'll never be in the grocery store looking at the tabloid magazines and see a Hollywood celebrity renting out her uterus for her poor housekeeper. You know, you'll never see Donald Trump or President Obama's, you know, children have to sell their eggs to pay for their school debt. It's always going to be a class issue. It's why we don't allow people to sell their organs in the United States. We know the people who need money will sell, and the people who have money will be able to buy. So that leads to exploitation. You know, the rich will have, and the poor will be the have-nots.
So you've done lots and lots of writing and thinking about the exploitation of women in third world countries for their eggs. What were your concerns there?
Well, these are truly, truly impoverished women, often who don't even have, you know, the literacy to read these 60 and 80 page contracts that I read all the time that are signed by American surrogates. So you really are looking at preying upon the absolute destitute women who have to be separated from their families for the whole entire 9 months of a pregnancy and put in dormitory-like housing, with everything controlled, when they eat, what they can eat. And then, of course, once the baby's born, we send them back to their poor communities, and we're not concerned about their nutrition or their health and well-being then. It's only when they're, you know, pregnant for a wealthy couple in the international communities that we see these women being properly cared for. You know, if women are really impoverished, why should they have to sell their body or rent out their body in order to be able to put food on their tables or send their children to school? I think that's a huge systems problem that we need to look at. Instead of saying, oh, this is work, and that these women are working for 9 months, and that we're going to compensate them. I don't think pregnancy is work. It's labor. You go into labor, if you will, to deliver a child, but in the sense of work and commerce and being paid for your work, pregnancy is not work.
One of the allegations that has been leveled against Representative Trent Franks is that he offered, I think the figure was somewhere around $500,000 to either one or more women to act as a surrogate, regardless of that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's an absolute scandal. I'd like to know more about if that is, one, indeed a fact. Two, was that taxpayer money that he was going to be offering these women? I don't know how wealthy Representative Franks is. But, you know, that gets back to, again, the coercion and the power that money plays and why we don't allow money to play a role in our ethical decision-making, especially when it relates to our own health. So women who are being offered such large sums of money often will be tempted to do something that they otherwise would not do, and the whole corruption that money plays into it. I think, like I said, it's a scandal that needs further investigation.
How would you respond to someone who says, look, part of the reason that people who are pro-life don't have IVF or surrogacy on their radar, on their moral radars, is because they simply don't understand the procedures, what actually happens in the techniques put forward?
Yeah, I think that's a very valid assessment. People are woefully uneducated and uninformed. Therefore, they just see the tabloid. They see somebody who couldn't have a baby, and now they have one. And isn't that wonderful? And who could be against that? We have this great technology. God must have given it to us, so therefore we should be able to use it. I think it's sad, too. I think it's a criticism, if you will, on the state of the church today. I mean, I always tell members of the clergy when I have opportunity to speak to them, for heaven's sake, infertility is in the first chapter of the Bible. You know, ought that not give us a pass to talk about it in light of these new modern technologies? And what does the barren womb of today, the 21st century, mean? But how do we properly understand children, as again, as gifts and blessings, not something we have a right to or an entitlement to?
I wonder if that, you've mentioned that several times here, Jennifer, the entitlement to children, and especially if I have the means to do this and the technology available to me via those means, what's to stop me? How would you respond to that mentality that says, look, if I want a child, I should be able to get a child, however I see fit?
Well, I think you do have to point out, as graciously as possible, that that is a wrong perception of children. They're not something that I have a right to. And so I would just push back on that. You know, I would challenge them that we have a technology and perhaps financial resources at our means to do all kinds of things that we don't do because we know they're wrong. And so to make a compelling argument for perhaps why one ought not to access technology that's readily available, it's not illegal, and you have the money to access, there's all kinds of things I could do every single day that I have to choose not to do, even though I could choose them. So I don't think it's anything unique, but I do think people are overwhelmingly uninformed and uneducated. That's why we've, you know, gotten into the business of making documentary films, because it's such a compelling way to sort of educate people quickly by watching a 51-minute film, if you will, and people walk away and go, oh, now I know why young women shouldn't sell their eggs. Or, oh, now I understand better the importance of maternal-child bonding and the risk to these women who get attached to children that they then have to surrender because they've been offered $5 million.
The money sounds good when it's just a proposition at the beginning. But 9 months passes when a woman, when a child is growing in that woman's womb. What would you say to a woman who's considering acting as a surrogate and says, look, the money looks really good to me now, and I think 9 months from now I'll be able to do this?
Yeah, and I do talk to those sorts of women all the time. And so I do, you know, raise all the issues about maternal child bonding, about the risk that you are taking to your own health and well-being. We had a U.S. surrogate 3 years ago who died a day away from a scheduled full-term surrogate pregnancy carrying twins. The twins died. You know, that you are taking these, you know, incredible risks with your own health. The role of your pregnancy, if you are a mom with little children in the home, what does it mean to your little children when they see mommy keeping some babies and giving some babies away for money to nice people or strangers? What will that impact be? What will that impact be on your, perhaps your own marriage? You know, when you're laying in bed next to your husband and you're intimate, if you will, with a stranger's baby growing inside of you. You know, the two flesh shall become one, and the mystery of those two flesh shall becoming one is a powerful thing that brings unique intimacy, if you will, in a marriage, in the marital bed. I mean, what happens to that bond between a husband and wife when your wife or you are pregnant with, you know, somebody else's baby? You know, I try to use whatever in my tool bag, if you will, that might resonate with the person I'm speaking to. I mean, that's the beauty of the Jesus parables. You know, Jesus didn't have a canned bullet point speech. He went in, he knew the need. He knew how to reach a particular person because of where they were in their own struggle. So I don't think it's something we should have a canned speech for, but trying to understand why somebody's trying to do something that you're trying to talk them out of, and addressing those points is, I think, more effective.
To our lawmakers, for whom, with the exception apparently of the congressman we've been speaking about, they might say, look, I'm not an expert. We should leave the scientists to make up their minds on this. Let the scientists decide the right and wrong of this. How would you respond to that?
Well, the problem is that these cases oftentimes do go bad, and I spend most of my work in the areas where the cases go really bad. And then what happens is the lawyers have to come in and clean up the mess. And depending on which state you're in, you know, my state, California, is very, very friendly to surrogacy, but the law is written so it biases the intended parents, the people who are buying. And it's very much not protective of the women who are renting or selling. So while we could say, well, let's just leave the ethics, if you will, to the scientists, well, I don't think scientists are by nature ethical. I mean, they're just scientists. You can certainly be an ethical scientist, but their discipline is just hardcore science. You know, can we do something? Not should we do it? You know, the lawyers come in with the buckets and mops and try to clean up when we have, a surrogate mother who's changed her mind, a surrogate mother who's being told she has to abort the pregnancy even though she doesn't want to, a surrogate mother who's left with unpaid bills even though the contract said everything was going to be covered. You know, these are the kind of women I'm dealing with all the time, and the law doesn't protect them either. We need good public policy that protects all the stakeholders, and that even includes the children, who are often not even considered at all. That's why we have 750,000 human embryos in the freezer. We're not thinking about the children as we're creating all these live little babies in the laboratory. So I think, you know, we need a very robust, well-informed, philosophical, theological, yes, scientific, legal discussion around this. And I think if we had that robust conversation, debate, a lot more people would come to my position, which is the best laws to be passed are that we don't do this.
Jennifer Lull spent 25 years as a pediatric critical care nurse, a hospital administrator, and a senior level nursing manager. She's founder and president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network, director and executive producer of the films Exploitation, Anonymous Father's Day, and Breeders, a Subclass of Women. You can find out more about the great work of the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll be giving away the books Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, and 5 Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life to listeners with the best questions for Pastors Will Wheaton and Heath Curtis on the Christian life. We'll get Dr. Jeff Gibbs' reaction to a suggestion by Pope Francis to change the petition of the Lord's Prayer, Lead Us Not Into Temptation, as well. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Give the gift of time this Christmas with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. A happy wife is a happy life. A Christmas gift certificate from your favorite house cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.